Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From the ESPN Upstate World headquarters in Greenville, South Carolina, this is The Huddle with G-Mac, Greg McKinney, KB, Ken Blankenship, and Lonzo. Call 844-GSP-ESPN.
Text us at 47183.
Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at ESPN Upstate. Welcome to The Huddle.
This is ESPN Upstate.
It's the Thursday Huddle. Welcome in to ESPN Upstate here on September 29th, 2 days before some big college football games. Got some good ones this weekend. And we'll be talking about all those. Of course, Clemson-Louisville. We're going to hear from several people on that game, including Bobby Petrino, Louisville coach, coming up. We'll hear an update on injuries for Clemson from Dabo Swinney after practice. And I want to get to Jadar Johnson, the Clemson safety, and some comments he made about number eight. You didn't even know his name, Lamar Jackson's name. Is that number eight? So we'll see what you think of that coming up on the show. We'll hear those comments. We'll get into some high school football. Going to hear from Brian Lane of the Burns Rebels, Burns and Spartanburg tomorrow night. Big game that we'll have for you right here on ESPN Upstate. And C.J. Spiller has a new gig, a new team. We'll get to that for you on the show today. Maybe a little preview of NFL action tonight, Miami and Cincinnati. We get that game here on ESPN Upstate at 8 o'clock. Even a little bit of news, maybe some bulletin board material for the Ryder Cup, which is about to open up. So even some golf mixed in today. KB's off today. J.C. Sherbert with TheBigSpur.com has been kind enough to jump in. J.C., how are you?
Hey, good to be with you guys today.
All right, we have a little mic issue there with J.C. You're back.
There we go.
No?
Can you hear me now?
There it is.
See, all right, see, the mic issue is that I didn't turn it on.
That's an issue.
Yes, and it's something that I like to do to KB, and I apologize. Mm-hmm.
All right, apology accepted. Yes, great to be here today and talk a little sports here in the afternoon.
Absolutely, we appreciate that. We have plenty to talk about this weekend. We'll get to it in a minute. Lonzo is here, and your phone calls are welcome on the show today. 844-477-3776. You can text us at 47183, and you can hit us on Twitter as always at ESPN Upstate.
And now the opening drive. Here's what's trending in the sports world on the Huddle.
Let's start with Bobby Petrino, the Louisville head coach. 2 days out from Clemson, Louisville, 8 o'clock, actually probably like 8:20 before they kick this thing off. Saturday night over at Death Valley, you've got game day there, just a huge event, biggest home game at Clemson in a while, and the environment should be special over there. Bobby Petrino talking about the noise and the environment when he was asked about it this week leading up to the game.
Is that a trap question? Huh? Like that trap game last week. It's a loud place. It's a good environment. I thought it was a great environment. It's exciting. It's fun. You know, game day will be there, so it'll be exciting for everybody. One of the things that after we played them at the end of the season that year, anytime I talked to a fan that traveled to the game, they were very complimentary how well the people treated them and how nice the people were to our fans that went to the game. So that's one of the things that stuck out to me a lot.
He wasn't suckered into any criticism of Clemson fans from his previous visits there, nor was he suckered into saying, I'm not worried about the noise. Because I imagine, J.C., that this will be one of the noisiest games we've had at Clemson. How much of an advantage is the home field, do you think, Saturday night?
I think in this situation it is. Louisville hadn't played in an environment like that. I'm not going to say they haven't played in any good environments. I mean, you know, Marshall was very overmatched, but, you know, those fans show up. That's a smaller stadium, though. And then, you know, the Carrier Dome sometimes is weird to go play in. Yeah. But, you know, none of those places are Clemson on a Saturday night. On a nationally televised game. I mean, you think back in the recent years when Clemson's played, you know, those types of games, with the exception of 2013 in Florida State. They tend to play very, very well. The crowd's very, very loud, and it is a brutal place to go get a win. So this is going to be unlike anything Louisville's faced as a football team this year. It'll be unlike anything Lamar Jackson has faced as a quarterback. And it's going to be a tougher environment. So I think that matters a lot. Now, if you go in there and you get up big early and people get quiet, which is kind of what happened with FSU a couple of years ago, and I'm certainly not I wouldn't predict that to happen. But, you know, from Louisville's standpoint, if you go in there and do that, then it's just like any other stadium where, you know, the crowd's kind of quiet and it's not as daunting. So I guess what I mean by that is if you're Louisville, you want to get off to a good start in the ball game and try to sort of get up and down the field on offense and make plays and stall Clemson's offense if you possibly can. But that's sort of a Captain Obvious answer, because I think anytime you go on the road, you want to do that.
But did you remember, was 2013, I think, when Jameis came in here? Everybody was saying the same thing. Jameis has never played in this kind of environment. And then they punched Clemson in the mouth, and Clemson turned the ball over, and the environment was gone.
That's what I was saying. I mean, you know, if you, like FSU did that time, that's the key to winning. But if it's a tight back and forth game, the crowd's going to be very loud. I mean, heck, in a monsoon last year against Notre Dame, I mean, that was a big game, kind of like this one, and they were very, very loud and really made a difference. You know, even with the rain and things like that. It's one of the louder stadiums that I've ever been in. It's one of the loudest stadiums in college football. The crowd, you know, sort of because it's down in the hole and it's very steep and severely raked as far as the seating. You know, the sound really does not escape in Death Valley, especially when they're rolling. So it's a loud place. It's a good place. And the comment Petrino made about the fans, I've heard that from just about every opposing fan base outside of South Carolina and Georgia that go and play at Clemson. You know, Texas A&M came in, 10 years ago. I had some friends that were A&M people that came in and played. You know, and this is the first time I've ever been going to Clemson. They talked about how nice the people were, Notre Dame people from last year. I mean, universally throughout college football, people praise Clemson fans for their hospitality. So I think that's a good thing. I think that's a very positive deal that you can show sportsmanship like that and make people feel welcome and then go try to beat their butts on the field and yell as loud as you possibly can.
You know, talking about Notre Dame game last year and several Clemson home games last year where the rain was such an issue. Notre Dame was the worst, I think, last year. This weekend, no such problem. It's going to be perfect. I mean, we're looking at a high about 80, 82 on Saturday. So game time in the evening, you know, you'll be down maybe in the 60s, which are getting into the 60s at least, because the low that night's supposed to be about 56. That's going to be a treat for these Clemson fans who had to sit through some bad weather games last year.
Yeah, and heat earlier this year against Troy. Mm-hmm. So it's and South Carolina State wasn't an extremely hot game, but it was still hot. So, yeah, just going to be a perfect day for football over there. I mean, it's you know, you only get, no matter who you are, you only really get you know, one or two, maybe three of these chances every year where you play the game or game day's there. You know, where it's a big game, and obviously you always hope for great weather and great tailgating, and that's kind of how memories are made. And part of the reason we all love college football is because, you know, not so much what happens in the game, but what happens before and sort of the time you can spend with friends and family.
Yeah, it'll be a great day for tailgating over at Clemson, and they expect people out early because game day is there early in the morning at 9 a.m., so it'll be an all-day crowd over there at Clemson. Just talking about where the line has moved, and we talked about this a bit yesterday, it's really remarkable because just a few weeks ago, you know, preseason, Clemson was favored by 10 in this game. Just a few weeks ago. Now Louisville's favored by 2. That's a 12-point move in a few weeks just because really of how I'm more about how Louisville's played. Clemson hasn't been particularly disappointing in my mind. They've done what they've needed to do. They may not have lit it up like some people wanted to see this offense do this year, but Louisville has just surprised everybody with how good they've been, and that line's moved in a huge way.
Well, you've got kind of a, you know, sometimes when programs take that next step, and I think Louisville so far this year has shown that it's wanting to do that, it takes a convergence of happenings, I guess. And what you have there is you have Bobby Petrino, who's one of the best play callers in college football, best offensive minds. And, you know, his first 2 years at Louisville, you know, maybe they didn't have the right personnel. They were very young last season, played a lot of true freshmen. And you have him kind of converging with Lamar Jackson, who is an exceptional athlete, who made some big plays last year, but who it looks like they've taught to play the quarterback position pretty well. I mean, he's a much better passer and has a much better feel for the offense than he did last season. So, you know, you combine a great play caller with a guy that even if the play calls don't work and things break down, he can kill you with his legs. You know, that's dangerous. Plus, their receivers that were, as a whole, very young last season or a year older. I think they finished last season pretty well with the win over A&M and the Music City Bowl. So that gave them some offseason momentum. And then you have these guys, the transfer guys like Fields and Harvey Clemens and those guys on defense that, you know, maybe last year they were kind of new to the program, not necessarily the system with some of them because some of them played for Grantham at Georgia. Really kind of coming into their own on the defensive side of the ball. And that, quite frankly, was what was a little impressive or way impressive about their game against FSU is that it wasn't a shootout. I mean, Louisville dominated them on defense as well. Yeah, and I have some thoughts about how they sort of match up with Clemson, but, you know, that side of the ball is going well too. You know, and a big part of that's the transfers they've gotten in. I mean, Devontae Fields was an All-American at TCU. Josh Harvey Clemens, I remember the day he signed with Georgia, you know, that staff and that fan base thought they had signed the best player in Georgia that year. He's a 6'5", kind of hybrid-type safety linebacker-esque guy. So they got some pieces, you know, and it's all kind of come together here, and it's shown on the field their first four games of the season.
No doubt about it. One quick question. We'll spend a good bit of time on Clemson-Louisville today and try to get at a few angles here on the game. But if you are Brent Venables and you're game planning, scheming to try to slow down Lamar Jackson, you want to force him to throw or do you want to force him to run? Pick your poison. I mean, what's your strategy in this game if you're Venables?
Pick your poison, I think. I would probably just because, I mean, it's a gamble either way. Because if you try to force him to throw the ball, you know, Petrino's very good at dialing up things that work, making adjustments, you know, calling that in from the sideline. You know, you're risking sort of there being a lot of open guys and banking sometimes that Lamar just won't be able to hit it. If you try to force him to run, he's such a dynamic runner, you know, that he could be hard to bottle up. Now here's the thing. I would probably lean, if I were Clemson, toward, you know, forcing him to maybe run the football and try to, like, keep him from throwing because you have a lot of athletes. I mean, you're going to have an advantage with your D-line over their offensive line, especially in the middle with guys like Wilkins and Watkins and Lawrence. You know, those guys can wreak havoc. And, you know, you get those guys at least slowing him when they penetrate at the point of attack and get in the backfield and disrupt things. You know, it's going to be hard for him even when you're dropping six or seven in coverage. It's going to be hard for him a lot of times to escape. Now, he will, and he'll have his share of plays, but Clemson's athletic enough on the defensive front, I think, to slow him. You know, and so what you got to worry about is, you know, if you're bottling him up, I think, and you're trying to sell out to keep him from running, I think that at that point, there's open guys down the field, and that could be a disaster. So I would probably try to max not necessarily all-out blitz, try to, you know, beat up their offensive line with my front four and drop a lot of guys into coverage to try to throw that passing game off. I mean, he's going to probably get his yards anyway, but what you don't want to do is for him to, you know, go crazy on you. And another thing here, too, if you drop guys and you're not necessarily blitzing him and, you know, force him to throw thing, even if he escapes and it breaks down, you're going to have enough guys back to where, you know, he breaks a couple of tackles, makes a couple of guys miss. You know, it may be a 30-yard game, but it won't be a 70-yarder or a touchdown.
Mm-hmm. I was just checking the over-under on this game, and it's kind of a moderately high 67 points as far as total points between the two teams. Chris Fowler at ESPN just tweeted a stat. He said, just a few minutes ago, he said, "You think defenses dominated the last two Clemson-Louisville football games? Dug this up on third down the last 2 years. These two teams were a combined 10 for 62 third down conversions." So we had defensive struggles the past 2 years. We're going to get more points this year than the past 2 years, certainly, right? Don't you think? I think so.
Yeah, I think they'll convert a bunch. And, I mean, you know, we you talk about it on the flip side of it, too. You know, Louisville's got to decide what they want to do as far as blitzing Deshaun Watson, sending pressure. Grantham loves to do that. That could turn into a disaster for them because with Clemson's receivers and Watson, that could be lethal and they could give up a lot of big plays.
You think over 67 points, though? I mean, that's like a, what, a 35-32 game there.
Yeah, 35-32, 38-35. Yeah. I think that's probably fair.
Yeah, that sounds pretty reasonable.
I mean, it's right there. I mean, it's not necessarily something I'd jump all over, but it's going to be right in that range most likely.
All right, your phone calls on this game or anything else we're talking about today, always welcome. We'll get to the Gamecocks and Texas A&M coming up. Get JC's thoughts on that because he certainly covers the Gamecocks very closely, and there's some things we can talk about going into that 4 o'clock game on Saturday afternoon. Phone lines open 844-477-3776. Text us 47183 if you like to tweet at ESPN Upstate. Thursday huddle back in a moment on ESPN Upstate. Stay with us.
From cheap shots to slap shots, this is The Huddle with Greg McKinney, KB, Ken Blankenship, and Lonzo.
Greenville.
105.9 FM and 1330 AM. Spartanburg. 97.1 FM and 950 AM. This is ESPN Upstate.
125 in The Huddle, ESPN Upstate. Greg McKinney, J.C. Sherbert with TheBigSpur.com. Lonzo here with you till 4 this afternoon. You can call us at 844-477-3776. Before we get to a little conversation about the Gamecocks and Texas A&M, let's get Delvin in here. Delvin, welcome. What's up?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Good.
I was talking about the game, and I said I would have my pick Thursday. I'm going to go 38-35 Clemson, but I still got this feeling that it could be like when Florida State came into town 3 years ago.
Well, those are two big different things there, Delvin. you think Clemson wins, but you're worried about a Florida State-style game, huh?
Yep.
All right. I don't know. I don't know if I believe that's going to happen. I don't know if I believe that this Clemson team is going to lose like that at home. But I know where that comes from because Louisville is so explosive and because they've done it to everybody they played.
Well, and Clemson's much better on both lines of scrimmage than that 2013 team was. Mm-hmm. I mean, they weren't where they are now on the D-line or the O-line. The D-line was coming by that point with guys like Jarrett and Beasley, but it isn't like it is now with the strength they have in the middle. And the offensive line is much better, too. And honestly, you know, no offense to Taj Boyd, I think he would admit, too, that Deshaun Watson's, you know, a much better quarterback. So mm-hmm. So they're improved across the board.
Yeah. I guess we're just at the final Saturday night.
All right, Delvin, we got you down for a close Clemson win. You can brag about it if you are correct. JC, let's switch to the Gamecocks. Texas A&M coming into Columbia, 4 o'clock game, SEC Network on Saturday afternoon. Texas A&M favored by 18.5 points, the last line I saw. Last week, I haven't talked to you since the Kentucky game. What's up with the offense? How big a concern? What can South Carolina do about this offense at this point in the season?
I don't know. Very, very little other than play better at certain spots and hope that McElwain gets better, I guess, with what he can do. I mean, you know, you look at it, and there are different reasons why it's struggling. It's all kind of come together. First and foremost, you have a true freshman quarterback. Now, after the game Saturday night, you know, I was kind of like, well, I don't know. I was like, I don't know what they're trying to do with what they're running, blah, blah, blah. Well, then I went back and watched the film. And on the 3rd-and-17 play at the end of the game where he threw it up to, I think, Edwards deep, incomplete. Edwards was covered. You know, there were two guys short. Wide open. A.J. Turner was wide open in the middle of the field. Easy first down. Maybe would have scored because he was so wide open. Kentucky did not cover the middle of the field at all. And there were several instances like that where he would throw a ball here or there or throw it out of bounds, and there were guys open. And what that is that that's called being a freshman quarterback. This is why, you know, a lot of fans think that you plug a guy in and he's great in high school and he can go play. And athletically and in practice, he looks fine, you know, because he's a great athlete and he was a great quarterback and he knows kind of how to practice and stuff like that. Where the difference is, and why guys struggle, and most freshman quarterbacks do, I think that, you know, a lot of Gamecock fans, after seeing what Deshaun Watson did at Clemson when he was a true freshman, think that that's just the norm, and it's definitely not. You know, is they don't see the field, and they don't go through their progressions. And Muschamp said the other day, it's not, you know, he makes his reads fine, but it's those second and third options that he's not hitting. He's not hitting the check down at all. He's throwing it out of bounds, running, or, you know, throwing it incomplete, or you know, he gets his first option. And so that's a struggle. The second struggle is that the offensive line has not played up to its potential. I mean, Corey Helms, who I don't believe, I've heard he's not very healthy. I've heard that he's got a minor injury he's trying to work through, or an injury he's trying to work through.
That's an all-ACC guy, right?
Yeah, all freshman All-American. At Wake Forest, and by all accounts, he's supposed to be good. He gets blown up every game multiple times. I mean, that is, if they make changes on the offensive line this week, they definitely need to put him on the bench, you know, especially if he's not healthy, because he's not doing anybody any good sitting out there getting blown up, because you can execute the play to perfection. Everybody can, all other 10 guys. And if he gets blown up in a one-on-one matchup, which he does time and time again, chances are the play's going to get blown up. Now, you know, and Mason Zandi certainly has struggled at left tackle with some speed rushers at times. But every offensive tackle in the SEC or in college football does that, because you have really good defensive linemen. You know, and then the other spots, I don't think they know what to do with DJ Park. You know, I think he's a guard. They've got him at right tackle. You know, with Blake Camper injured until after the open date, Donnell Stanley got injured the first play of the season. He was supposed to start. So they have some injuries they're battling through, too. Overall, though, even with all that type of stuff, injuries and guys not playing well, the offensive line in general is supposed to be a strength of this team.
Right.
And they've played powder puff a lot of times. I mean, you watch the South, I watched Tennessee play Florida the other day. Tennessee, you know, their guy would get stuffed in the backfield. Their offensive lineman would be in there fighting, and you know, they got beat, and obviously they didn't block it right, but they were there fighting. South Carolina, if you watch them, you'll see a back get blown up in the backfield, and all five guys are just standing around, you know, and I don't know that makes a block any better, but it shows at least that they're hustling and trying. And yeah, I think they're trying. I just think they need to play tougher. And so that's an issue. And then you look at South Carolina's wide receivers. You know, Debo Samuel has struggled with injury. That was a key to the season. He's played one full game.
Mm-hmm.
Rodriguez Davis was coming along as the second guy behind Bryan Edwards. He's now out with a hamstring injury for, you know, after the open date. You know, so South Carolina played Edwards, who's a true freshman, who's their number one guy, and then Chavis Dawkins, Terry Guger. And then Jamari Smith got in for three plays. They played four receivers against Kentucky. So even though some of those guys are open and McElwain's not hitting them, they don't have a lot of skill that they can go and say, all right, we're gonna hit this play to this guy and he's going to take it to the house because he's up. I mean, they just don't have that. The running backs, I think, have played better than expected. I think David Williams still is getting better. But, you know, you got one guy that's 180 pounds. That's a redshirt freshman that's more of a utility guy than an every down back. And then David, who, you know, has been up and down throughout his entire career. And then after that, there's nobody. I mean, they get Rico Dowdle back. But he's a true freshman. So
will he play running back this week?
Yeah. I mean, he's gonna play special teams. Yep. And I have a sneaky suspicion they're going to get him in at running back. But obviously, they haven't said that publicly. So there's a lot of things at work. And, you know, I wrote yesterday on thebigspur.com. And, you know, some people rip me because of it, because I guess everybody out there is a play-calling expert. But, you know, it's hard to rip Kurt Roper about the shape of the offense, no matter how bad the results are, you know, because of the personnel, one, and then the dysfunctionality in execution, because the personnel is not young and not ready to go. I mean, you know, look. Most of these guys that are out there playing at other programs would be definite red shirts or guys like that played like three snaps like Jamari Smith. And that includes Bryan Edwards. As good as he is, you know, at a program that had some depth and, you know, had a lot of experience at wide receiver. You know, let's say Texas A&M, for example. Brian Edwards would be on the field very little and probably playing special teams. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the issue there with it. It's not the play calling and Kurt Roper's fault. I know everybody's going to think that because everybody was like, oh, you know, the whole narrative, the false narrative about, Florida. Oh, you couldn't do anything at Florida, yeah. Blah, blah, blah. But this is a drastically different situation. The only similarities are he had to play a true freshman quarterback at Florida, too. So, mm-hmm. you know, Kurt Roper may be overachieving given everything. But it's a situation where, you know, at 2-2 right now, the record's not all that bad. But you see the tougher teams on the schedule coming up, and they're going to have to find a way to move the football better, or they have really little chance of winning, you know, until UMass comes to town on the 22nd of October.
Yeah, the 2-2 record is better than the play has been. I think we can kind of agree on that.
Especially on offense.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. How are they going to handle Myles Garrett on Saturday?
I don't know. I mean, run away from him? I don't know. Because, I mean, that's the challenge A&M's defense presents to you is – you have Myles Garrett on one end, and then you got 6'6", 270-pound Deshaun Hall on another, and he's a monster. And then Daylon Mack, who's a tank in the middle. I mean, their defensive line's very good. They have good athletic linebackers. They have the two safeties, Justin Evans and Armani Watts. There may not be a better pair in the SEC. You know, they've given up some yards this year. They're 70th in total defense, but they're 16th nationally in scoring defense. So teams have not been able to score against them. Similar to the Gamecocks, where they've had some good red zone opportunities. You know, Arkansas, you know, was able to go up and down the field on for about a half, and then A&M kind of, you know, came back and bowed up, and they were able to stop them. And then Auburn, which is a team that's had, you know, probably not as bad as South Carolina, but they've had similar inconsistencies on offense this year. Auburn only got 16 on them at home, and, you know, that it was a – clearly, they couldn't, you know, move it up and down the field on that defense. So it's the biggest challenge by far South Carolina's faced this year, especially with when you look at the A&M defense against the South Carolina offense. Really, it's the biggest challenge by far the South Carolina defense has had this year too. So it's a tall order in Columbia on Saturday.
In one sense, though, there's very little pressure. Expectations are really low for this game.
Yeah, they're not high at all, and. You know, I was reading the Dallas Morning News and some of their stuff. A&M, you know, they went through their press conference the other day, and, you know, they really didn't even talk about South Carolina. They talked about, you know, what they could do better and what they need to do and all that. And you know, here's the thing, too. Don't get me wrong. Texas A&M, at times, under Sumlin, they're kind of a screw-up. You know, they'll screw up sometimes, right. Lose a game. Nobody thinks they will. But most of the time, 9 times out of 10, that's at Kyle Field in College Station when they do that, which is bizarre because Kyle Field's a great home field atmosphere. It's loud. It's a great – one of the great venues in all of college football. But Kevin Sumlin, away from Kyle Field, he's 40-16 overall. He's 20-7 away from his home stadium, which is – that's half – those are half of his total wins at A&M have been – on the road, and he's got two more losses at home than he does on the road. So they play very well on the road. So down to the fact that, I mean, not only is it a horrendous matchup, you know, the intangibles of the matchup, too. You know, you're like, well, maybe A&M won't play well. They'll have to play pretty bad. Well, they normally don't play bad on the road. They're, you know, the one team in the SEC that probably plays better consistently away from home than at home. And so it just doesn't look like a situation where there's a great chance for success. If I'm South Carolina, I'm going to measure this game by, you know, effort and what you can accomplish in terms of development and all that. And the coaching staff, they're going to try to win. Don't get me wrong, and the players are too. Don't get me wrong, but if you're a fan and you're out there kind of looking at it, you know, understand that going into this game, South Carolina is at a huge disadvantage. This program out at Texas A&M has not only been recruiting for 5 years, under Sumlin, they've been recruiting at an elite level. I mean, this is year one, or as some say, year zero at South Carolina. So, you know, go to the game, enjoy it, watch it on TV, know that there's only 12 of these every single year, and don't get too upset with the results if they don't go South Carolina's way on Saturday, because it is a brutal matchup on paper when you look at it. But, you know, you play the game and you see what happens. But, you know, it seems like every weakness the Gamecocks have, you know, right down to Texas A&M has a big back named Keith Ford that they like to run in the second half. The Gamecocks have struggled with that this year in the second half of games. Vandy did it to them. Kentucky did it to them. Right down to that, you know, it is a bad, bad matchup for South Carolina.
All right, got to hit a break here. We'll come back with more. If you want to talk about it, you can call us, 844-477-3776. Text line 47183. We'll be right back in the huddle on ESPN Upstate.
From diamonds to gridirons, from rinks to courts, we've got you covered in the huddle.
Listen in Greenville.
105.9 FM and 1330 AM. Spartanburg. 97.1 FM and 950 AM.
You're listening to The Huddle with Greg McKinney.
KB. Ken Blankenship. And Lonzo.
ESPN Upstate.
KB off today. J.C. Sherbert in here with us. J.C., a couple of SEC personnel notes. Tim Williams, linebacker from Alabama, arrested this morning. Carrying a pistol without a permit. Happened about 1 o'clock this morning in his vehicle. This guy's a senior and a big-time player, right?
Yeah. He's one of those guys that has been in that program for a while and just developed. And toward the end of last year, he really started playing at a high level. He's from Louisiana, too. So one of those that Nick Saban took out of his former home state. And then, you know, this was supposed to be his year to really shine and be the guy, and he's played well so far. So not a good look for the Tide. They have Kentucky this weekend, though. Watched Kentucky last week, obviously, and I don't think they're gonna, you know, that's not gonna cost them this game this weekend.
Also, your website, The Big Spur, is reporting that Torrey Boyd is leaving South Carolina, seeking a transfer. What's the scoop there?
Yeah, here's a guy that coming out of junior college, you know, South Carolina found him late. He's from Rancho Cucamonga, California, has lived all over. The former staff liked him. Our guys, this was after I quit doing rankings, so our guys at 24/7 Sports, for some reason, really liked his film, ranked him a 4-star. I always thought that was kind of high. But he got to campus, and he's just not a very good player. I mean, just not very good. Good kid, did everything people ask him for, redshirted last year, needs to go down to a lower level to play. He was only playing on special teams. He got some snaps against Mississippi State because Chaz Elder kind of went out during that game. But his play with, you know, Jasper Sasser's playing better than he is, Antoine Wilder's playing better than he is, Smith and Elder playing better than he is, and they're going to recruit over him next year. So, you know, it's probably best that he goes someplace. I think maybe Lorenzo Ward should probably offer him a scholarship at Fresno, since he's blowing 31-point leads out there. I think, you know, if since he approved him at South Carolina, he should probably take him at Fresno State and let him go be a Bulldog.
Mm. Chaz Elder's back, too, right, this week?
He's practiced this week. I don't know how much he's going to play as far as is he going to be out there the whole time, because when he's healthy, 100% healthy, you know, he can go out there and play the whole game. I think he did against Vanderbilt, but he's practiced. They think they'll get him back. Probably won't be full speed ahead until Georgia, which is another bad deal for the Gamecocks against this A&M team that has loads of wide receivers. And, you know, they do all kinds of stuff where the safeties have to tackle and play well. So I think, I think we will see him this weekend, but probably won't see him back to full speed until Georgia.
All right, I want to get to the brother of Danny Willett. Do you remember the name Danny Willett? He won the Masters this year, kind of came out of nowhere and did that. And he has an entertaining brother who likes to get on Twitter. And we have the Ryder Cup coming up this week. Starts, I guess, tomorrow, right? And he's tweeting, and it's humorous. And we'll tell you about it coming up here in the huddle. Final break of this hour. We'll be back. ESPN Upstate, stay with us.
Down, set, putt, putt. You're in the huddle with Greg McKinney.
Listen in Greenville.
105.9 FM and 1330 AM. Spartanburg. 97.1 FM and 950 AM. Now it's time for you to talk back. Call 844-GSB-ESPN.
Text us at 47183.
Connect at ESPNUpstate.com.
This is ESPN Upstate.
Welcome back to the huddle, ESPN Upstate. Greg McKinney, J.C. Sherbert, Lonzo here. staying with you till 4 this afternoon to talk sports. Brothers are fun, aren't they? Danny Willett won the Masters, and now he's on the Ryder Cup team for Europe. And his brother is Peter Willett. And he wrote an article. He wrote an article for a golf magazine talking about this Ryder Cup that starts this weekend. And he basically said this. He talked about Americans being pudgy, basement-dwelling irritants, stuffed on cookie dough, and blank beer, the blank being that it tastes like urine, so you can figure that out, pausing between mouthfuls of hot dogs so they can scream Baba Booey till their jelly faces turn red.
Did he spell Baba Booey correct? Would you know if he spelled that correct?
B-A-B-A-B-O-O-E-Y, is that correct?
I've never seen it spelled out before, so I was curious.
If you don't know Baba Booey, that's a stern thing. Let's see, what else did he say here? I got some more here. That's from another article here. Let me find it. He said, the Europeans need to silence the pudgy basement-dwelling irritants and smash the obnoxious dads with their shiny teeth, Lego man hair, medicated ex-wives, and resentful children. I mean, it's pretty good writing, right? It's creative.
I love the Lego man hair comment. That's great. I've never heard that before.
Lego man hair.
There's a lot of fat people in England, though.
Yeah,
and in Bulgaria.
And you only talk about Americans' teeth, I don't think, if you're from
England. Yeah, I don't
England.
Think you should. Does anybody in this room have Lego man hair?
What is Lego man hair? Is it like stiff?
I don't
stand
know.
Straight up?
I mean, I think again, in England, the hairstyles on males are a little bit bland compared to the hairstyles over here. I mean, I don't know what he's looking at. I mean, it's all in fun, obviously, but...
it's good stuff, though. I love it.
If you want to... I don't know. I just, you know, fine.
Whatever. I'm looking it up in the Urban Dictionary.
I like hot dogs, you know. We like hot dogs over here.
We do like our hot dogs.
All right, you want to know what Lego hair is?
Yes.
According to the Urban Dictionary, I use a word I will not use, so I'll replace it. A particularly crappy male haircut in which the sides cover the ears and the hair appears to be snap-on.
See, I've seen that in England way more pictures of British folks than Americans.
So basically a bad rug-looking thing.
I'm not saying there's not a ton of bad haircuts out there. Heck, I have bad haircuts sometimes, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't know, brother. I just don't know. I don't know about that.
I don't know either. How about a baying mob of imbeciles? That's pretty good. Well, Danny Willett has already apologized. The golfer. He's already apologized.
Why?
He says this. If you have to say this, I don't know. I don't know why you have to say this. He said, this is not the thoughts of me or the team. We knew that. We knew whose thoughts it was.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with talking stuff to who you're, I mean, to the other team, but you don't apologize for
it. Yeah, I mean, that's just like, that's so Canadian, you know?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Sorry. What's this all about? I'm sorry.
Darren Clark is the captain of the European team. He expressed disappointment with this article in the Golf Magazine. He said, it's not what Danny thinks. It's not what I think. It's not what Team Europe stands for. I was obviously very disappointed in it because that's an outside person expressing their opinion, which is not representative of what our thoughts are.
Oh, blah.
Davis Love said he's resisted the temptation to read the article. He says, if I read it, I'm going to get mad. If I read it, I'm going to get defensive, so I'll just try to ignore it. Davis Love from North Carolina, of course. So he's resisting the temptation to
read it. Come on, read it, Davis, and respond.
I mean, it's a little bulletin board material, isn't it? Can't you use that to get fired up? I mean, Americans haven't done so well in this thing.
Can you use it in golf?
The Ryder Cup, you get some energy. You get some smack talk going in Ryder Cup, right? I mean, it's the only real team part of golf you have. It's that American thing. You need a little something to get you jazzed up because we haven't done so well in the Ryder Cup.
This sounds so Happy Gilmore. All of this does.
I like it. He's a school teacher, Peter Willett. And he was talking about what each side needs to do to win. He says, if all these things happen, Europe will win, and I'll try to support gracefully by embracing the same sense of fair-mindedness that has permeated this unbiased article. If not, the Americans will claim their second victory this century.
Oh, man.
Another shot from Peter Willett. I think it's pretty good. And now he'll tweet. He tweeted after this, after all the reaction. He has 24,500 Twitter followers. Peter Willett now, not the golfer, the teacher. Because of the tweeting he did during the Masters, I got him a bunch of followers because he was mouthing off during the Masters, too. He said, sorry to any American followers, but I mean every word. Come on, Team Europe. He's not apologizing for it.
Good. He's got a spine.
Yeah, he's standing by it.
Come on now.
I mean, come on. We need something to get us excited about golf, right?
Makes you wonder how he treats the students in his class, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they love him. I'm sure they're loving the attention for this. If you want to read all that, we have a link to it on Facebook for what he wrote that you can get on our Facebook page, ESPN Upstate. On Facebook, check it out. Ryder Cup about to get underway. And I mean, look, golf fans love this event. They just do. I mean, you got your four majors, you got the Ryder Cup, right?
Yeah.
That's the golf season.
It's great. It's a great event. I enjoy the Ryder Cup. I think it's, with what golf I watch during football, I enjoy it, and it's mm-hmm. competitive, and, you know, we'll see what happens. But you know what? It's not one where, you know, like my pride as an American gets hurt if we lose.
Good because we lose a lot.
I know. It's fine. I mean, you know, it's like hockey, you know?
Right.
I care more about American hockey than
the World Cup of hockey.
As far as winning or losing, I'll watch the Ryder Cup over a hockey game most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say sitting in football season, that's difficult to get attention around here.
Mr. Brownstone is on. Wow.
There you go.
I love this.
All right, we will come back with J.D.R. Johnson. We'll see if you think he said anything to get Louisville fired up for the Clemson-Louisville game on Saturday night. He's a safety for the Clemson Tigers. We'll hear from Brian Lane of the Burns Rebels, their big game coming up with Spartanburg tomorrow night. And we'll tell you about C.J. Spiller's new team. All ahead in the Huddle, second hour coming up on ESPN Upstate.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.